When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Tom Hostick-Undell, the fit and firing Patrick Bamford of the podcast. Is this 2020-21 again? And I'm joined by the Ilya Gruev of the podcast. He's a top podder with a top mentality. It's Martin Riley. And finally, I'm joined by the two Cardiff defenders running into each other and allowing Dan James the freedom of Ninian Park. It's Dan Holdsworth. How are we, Dan?
Tip top. I'm full of roast lamb dinner on a Monday night, which I think is outrageous. For a Monday.
It's outrageous.
For a Monday, isn't it? But otherwise, I'm very good. Just happy that Leeds have won at the weekend and I'm here to talk about it. How are you? That's a key question.
Yeah, I'm good. I've had a spag bol tonight.
Good.
As has been discussed and nearly caused some arguments in our admin chat tonight. that was lovely. And despite what some others may say. And yeah, Martin, what about you? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I've had some sausages and mash tonight. Bog standard, nice tea. Nothing special, but some nice Cumberland sausages, which were pretty banging. Had a good weekend. Enjoyed Leeds winning. And I'm looking forward to having a chat with you too. Lovely jet traps.
Yeah, so as you just mentioned there, Leeds won this weekend, so we got a victory 3-0 over Cardiff down at their place. But first we'll just talk about some news that has happened over the past week. So the first thing we'll touch on is the departure of Luke Ayling on loan to Middlesbrough. How are we feeling about that?
Kind of, it makes sense. It's a bit like the Bielsa sacking, a little bit, but like emotional at the same time. Ooh, that's opened a sore, hasn't it? Saying that.
Just a little.
Yeah. No, kind of... All those, I mean, there's been a lot of really nice tributes to Luke, hasn't there? And a lot of, you know, online and what have you, and the club put some nice stuff out. And it's like, it kind of, it's kind of sad to see him go, but it feels like quite a happy departure, if that makes sense, in that, like, we've got to say some nice things about it. I'm pretty sure he's enjoyed the tributes and the kind of outpouring from the fans, and he gets to go and play football. And by the sounds of things, he played all right in his first game for Borough, which is cool. So, kind of best all around, really. I'm happy for him. I'm happy that he realises he's loved here, and I hope nothing but good things for him.
Martin, we know your love for Bill. You've said it many a times, but then also said, obviously, it may have been time for him to move on. How are you feeling about it now that it's happened?
Yeah, it's obviously he wasn't part of the first team, so it makes sense that he had to be moved on, but I'm absolutely gutted about it, to be honest. He's been one of my favourite players for a long time. I felt a bit of a personal connection with Luke, mainly because we both have long hair and we both have a bit of a stutter, or at least I used to in my younger days. Not as bad as Luke's is, but I still did have that during my formative years. Going up into my late teens, I had a relatively bad stutter, which I've grown out of due to working a lot in call centres and challenging myself and forcing myself to get over it. And so he's always someone who I've looked up to, because even though I'm older than him, it's weird to say I'll look up to him. Isn't that weird? You say that, but yeah.
It's the way that I guess he set those examples for people with stutters on such a public space, right? I think that's fair to say that you look up to him in that sense.
Yeah, that's fair, yeah, indeed. And yeah, the He's got some great memories of Luke across his time. He's just been absolutely essential to a lot of things that we've done since even before we got promoted. Even before Bielsa came along, he was a good player for us before then as well. Yeah. It's not like he was one of those players who was crap before and he suddenly got made really, really good. Yeah, he got improved by Bielsa, but not as much as some players, I think. And I just love the guy and I wish him all the best and really hope that he has a good time at Middlesbrough. And if they do decide to take him on permanently, then that'd be good. He deserves to have a good end to his career and makes new memories with a new squad. And yeah, all the stuff that come out of the club, I was pretty emotional about some of those, especially the like 10-minute long goodbye thing which went out. And that was
I've managed to avoid it because I was kind of like not in the mood to be tear jerked in a sense last week. So I managed to avoid most of the tributes. I plan on watching them at some point this week, probably. But yeah, last week, like first week back at work, and I just kind of said to myself, "Yeah, no, this is tiring enough. I don't need to go home and then watch 10-minute tributes to someone who's like obviously given so many good memories, as we said, you know, Huddersfield at home, and then just all those sort of things really for me. Like I said, he was good under Monk that first season that we had him. Don't think I saw him ever being the attacking outlet that he really was, but that he turned into, because obviously Monk played that kind of safe ball. But yeah, his character when we went through that bad run in the promotion season, the interview after the Nottingham Forest game, like clearly he pulled that squad quite a bit around that time probably. So yeah, many thanks to him for giving so many memories.
One of the things that impressed me about Luke Ayling is the many faces in terms of the football player. You know, the kind of marauding wing back to the kind of defensive right back under Monk to the occasional centre back in the Premier League and doing it all equally well. It's like how many players have so many, you know, can play so many positions so well, like at such a late stage in their career. It's like it's remarkable, really. And I think it's worth pointing out when we talk about his work, you know, like representing people with stutters and that kind of stuff. Also, he was the first Premier League player to go to a Pride event, and he was like a big supporter of the Marching Out Together group. So I think, you know, credit to the guy for that as well. That's you know, it's a big deal, I think, really. So just kind of goes to show what a good bloke
he's
is.
He's done a lot outside of the club and outside of football
just a good bloke.
I think obviously hasn't gone unnoticed amongst people. One of the old guard leaving, so to speak, and then one of the upcoming prospects that we signed, start of last season, has gone out on loan and played his first game at the weekend, played a full 90 minutes, and that's Darko Djedi. How do we feel about him going on loan to Championship team Plymouth? Martin?
I'm very happy about it, to be honest. It's a good move for him, and we've seen straight away that he's going to get minutes, because he's in there literally straight away as soon as he joins. So it's a really good move for him to get some game time and to develop some more. And he's a player who I think has maybe been a little bit hard done by and maybe could have got some more minutes. But that's not him. There's other players who are more senior to him who haven't had a lot of minutes this season. So it's not just something which he's suffering from. It's just he's definitely not going to get the minutes. Because we've now got Grove, who is going to be getting more minutes. So he's going to have even less opportunity since he's going to be getting those minutes as well. So it makes sense for both us and him to get some more exposure to men's football for him, and hopefully he can develop some and come back a bit better player, and hopefully he can contribute for us in the future.
Dan, you got anything to add?
Yeah, just I mean, echo what Martin said. Yeah, I was always a bit of a Darko Djedi fan, and he was someone I picked out in the summer to maybe break through this season. So it's been a disappointment that he hasn't. But I guess Leeds have done good business in centre mid, haven't they, in the summer, buying senior players. Yeah. And I guess he's been leapfrogged a bit by Archie as well, which fair enough. Archie's great, but Plymouth's a good place for him to go. I think it's possibly slightly higher level than I would have expected. I would have thought League One perhaps, but Plymouth, quite a smart club, well run club. I think, you know, they're pretty good at spotting talent and developing it. You know, they like to trade and stuff. So I think it's probably a good home for him, either to go and develop and come back to Leeds and have another crack at Leeds, or just to, you know, get himself out there in the market. Either way, I think it's a good move.
Yeah, I think we watched some of the under-20s, England under-20s stuff last summer and thought he looked really good. And then when he came back in pre-season, he kind of were slightly disappointed, I think, with his pre-season outings, if I remember rightly.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think it's worth noting, obviously, Plymouth have just hired Ian Foster as their manager, who was the under-20s manager last summer. So he knows GAB quite well, and a friend of the podcast, Will Clay, has watched the Plymouth Huddersfield game today, and kind of just to watch GAB, and he's clipped up some stuff and kind of said that his physical strength is actually there for this game, and it looks like his use of his body and his physicality is really good. He did say that he may have been at slight fault for Huddersfield's goal, but you know, it's basically his first real senior start, so promising signs, I guess, from what Will Clay said.
Yeah, do we know where he played? What position? Did he play 6 or 8? Do we know? I think he was 8, I think.
I think he played as a 6 or an 8. I can't remember which.
Yeah,
because Will didn't say.
Because I'm not keen him as a 6. I don't think he needs to be the first receiver. I think I want him kind of driving up the field. So I just hope they don't use him as... I hope they use him as that, if it isn't a double pivot, he's the guy that gets to range forward of the two.
It is in a double pivot. I'm not sure if he was the more advanced one. But the podcast who we spoke to about Plymouth earlier in the season, they said that later in the game he was a bit more advanced and that he looked good when he was serving the field. And I think that's where he's probably best to be used, a little bit further up as a box-to-box midfielder rather than, I agree with what you said there, rather than a deeper six. That's just, it wastes a lot of the talent that he's got and his ball-carrying skill. So it makes more sense to have him further up the field. So,
And I think one of the criticisms of him has been that occasionally he's sloppy with the ball, like receiving and turning, which you don't need from your 6. You need your 6 to be kind of, you know, really neat and tidy, don't you? So I guess that's something he'll need to develop before he can play 6 as well.
Yeah, and then final bit of news is he had a good game, even though he was everywhere on Saturday, but Firpo went off and possible dead leg. How do we think that affects the club and defensive situation at the moment with a full-back stand?
Well, dead legs tend to be, you know, a few days out, a week out, don't they? So fingers crossed, it's just a week of light training, he'd be fine for the weekend. If it's longer than that, then we've got to hope Byram's ready, basically. Fingers crossed he's available, because I think, he's been playing pretty well, and he kind of suits the kind of more advanced, he's effective as a left winger when we attack, isn't he? So that suits, and that helps Somerville, I think. So let's hope he stays fit. We can keep that going.
Yeah, I agree. It's a shame that he's picked up this. I hope it is just a dead leg and it isn't anything more serious. But it would be a real shame because he's just getting a bit of rhythm to his appearances. You know, it's quite the long-running meme at the moment about Firpo coming back, having a few games, playing well, then getting injured again. But I just hope that isn't the case again. Let's hope the meme isn't proven true.
Yeah, basically, I agree. And it probably just maybe puts a push on the club to, again, it kind of reinforces that, the fact that we've got two left backs that can pick up a knock every week. But we've talked a lot about the news there, so we'll finally get into the 3-0 victory game. So I will start with a game summary. Leeds started the game with their usual 4-2-3-1 formation, with Cardiff opting for a 4-3-3 shape. Leeds dominated possession for most of the first half, with Cardiff not threatening with the little possession they had, only threatening from long-range efforts. Leeds got off to a good start when Patrick Bamford converted from close range after a cross from Somerville, which led to a goal-mouth scramble and Bamford getting the final touch to make the score 1-0 on 13th minute. Leeds continued to make the better of the chances and extended their lead when a Somerville shot from close range was saved and Dan James was in the right place to score into an open goal, making the score 2-0 after half an hour. Second half continued much the way of the first, and with Leeds having the greater share of possession and Cardiff not really able to make any decent chances, Leeds had the opportunity to extend the lead to 3-0 thanks to a Jorginho Rutter 1 penalty, which Somerville took but struck the upright. But Leeds managed to increase their advantage late in the game, with Jorginho Rutter scoring after a swift break, and the game ended 3-0 to Leeds. So we'll start with the fact that Cardiff were unable all throughout the game to really create anything, only creating 0.4 XG. What do you think their game plan was, Martin, and how were we able to nullify it?
I think it was a pretty simplistic game plan, to be honest. I think they were mainly looking to hit us in transitional moments when we got forward and hoping to either get shots on goal from that or to get set pieces, and because they've got a very good record with set pieces. That's something which Daniel Farker mentioned in his post-match interview, was their set-piece threat. So that was the thing that they were looking for most. I think maybe they was hoping to do more with the possession that they had, but we were very good in our possession game in this. So we really did stop them from really progressing the ball in any meaningful way, both in the first half and in the second half. We didn't really let up with the intensity for both halves. and he really did show it, put Cardiff under a lot of trouble. Our second goal came from a high turnover, and they just weren't able to get anything going from the game at all, which I was surprised, really, because I was expecting a little bit more from Cardiff. I know we were a bit depleted earlier in the season when we last played them, but I was probably expecting a bit more, especially at their ground. And it was a bit of a disappointing performance from them. I think their fans will be quite disappointed with it, to be honest. And as we know, that Cardiff fans consider Leeds a bit of a derby game, thanks to the history in the past. But so, yeah, I was a bit disappointed with Cardiff. I was expecting a bit more fight from them.
Yeah, I think what we kind of said on the preview podcast regarding that maybe Bullet kind of has his idea of a game plan, but his team can't maybe execute it of what his ideal game plan is. And I felt like maybe that's exactly what we saw, was maybe they were trying to do what they were told, but really the players just can't do it to a good skill level. And that's why maybe the numbers that we talked about in the preview were a bit all over the place. But obviously, you mentioned there that we were able to nullify it quite well. And we've previously mentioned that we've not been happy with our pressing in games like this against lesser opposition. Dan, do you think that we've turned a corner here, or do you think it was just that Cardiff were bad?
Bit of column A, bit of column B, isn't it? So I think the general trend with our pressing is upward. I think generally speaking, if you look at the press in August and September compared to now, it's way better now, it's way better coordinated. Obviously helps, I don't know, get on his back, but it probably helps not having Pro in there and having Bamford in there, who's a great presser, and having Rutter behind him, who's a great presser, and James, and some of it always good pressers. So, you know, our front four are all good pressers, or, you know, they're all good to very good pressers, aren't they? So that helps, I guess, in this particular game. But I just generally think the general trend of the quality of our pressing is better, and I think it was one of those games where we, to me, it felt like, and you guys might disagree, it felt like we had quite a good situational press. We were kind of like, I felt like we were pushing Cardiff to one side and then jumping on them, like on the wing, the fullback kind of areas, and winning the ball there and going from there. So it's almost like we're folding over onto them. So if they're right back at the ball, like Bamford and Dan James, the far side winger would kind of fold over and pin them over. And then it would be like Somerville, Kamara and Ruteau would kind of step up and like win the ball and then go. And the same would happen on the other side. You know, Somerville and Bamford would fold over and push them towards Dan James, who would win the ball with the 10 and the 8, effectively. With Gruev just sort of backing it up. And by the way, Gruev had some really nice counter-pressing moments as well when they broke through our press on the few occasions. So yeah, I just thought it was just a really good aggressive press. I do have a bit of a theory in my head that it's like we have struggled, haven't we, in midweek games. I mean, where these games where we've struggled against these sort of teams, there's often been when we've had a game 2-3 days late after another game. So I wonder if the energy levels drop, that kind of athleticism drops. So that's perhaps a factor in why we've not necessarily always been happy with it. You know, they had a full week here. They were rotated quite heavily in the FA Cup the week before, so a lot of the players would be fresh, that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think in terms of energy and athleticism, we were kind of a bit too much for them. And it was a well-constructed press, so it was just generally too much. And I guess they're trying to play some football with, you know, like possession-based football, perhaps a little bit, with players that aren't quite up to it against, you know, semi-Premier League players, whatever we have in our attack, you know, kind of top-end champ, lower-end Premier League level sort of players. And it was just too much for them to cope with, I think. But yeah, I just thought it was a nicely executed press with where it just kind of it put our kind of athletic and quality advantages, you know, put them to the fore and meant that we were winning the ball often and frequently. And yeah, and just that was it, really.
Yeah, Martin, anything to add on that?
I agree with a lot of what Dan said there. I think we were just had a really good intense press going on in this game, and it really did help because we have, like Dan mentioned, struggled with some games, especially against lower opponents in the league. So we questioned whether it was whether we were up for the games enough. But that would make sense for what Dan mentioned there with a lot of midweek games around Christmas, that there would be a bit of a drop in energy levels, and because not every squad is able to do it twice a week. We were generally able to do it under Bielsa, but obviously Bielsa's a bit different. He's built differently. Mm. Yeah. And he got them up to really, really high fitness levels. And so maybe that is the case. And so it's probably worth something that we'll look at for the next midweek game that we've got, which isn't too far away now, I think. So we'll be interested in Norwich, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got Norwich now midweek after the FA Cup draw and getting to the fourth round. That game's been moved to midweek.
It'll be interesting because it's a home game. If that's a fact, you know, less travelling, that kind of stuff. So yeah, that'd be interesting to watch out for, actually. Norwich, kind of quite an intense game. Quite an intense team anyway, with a German coach who likes to counter press a bit anyway. So yeah, that'd be interesting to see how it goes in that one. Want to comment on, I think.
Yeah, that's also one which I want our standard of pressing to have improved, because the last game against Norwich, they played through us very, very easily. So it's definitely one that I'll be keeping an extra special eye on, that we do show better in this game. I realise it's going to be at Elland Road, so we'll probably be more up for it anyway, but just want better. And recent performances show that it has been good, even away from home. So fingers crossed it can keep that up.
Yeah, I think just one thing to note regarding, obviously, if we're thinking it might be due to fatigue and energy levels, we play Sunday and then Wednesday with that. So we've got Preston on the Sunday and then Norwich on the Wednesday, I think, is how it goes. So it's kind of like a quick turnaround still, even though they're both at home. But despite Cardiff only being able to create 0.4 XG, Leeds were able to create quite a lot of chances, with 3 non-penalty XG created in this game per FB ref. And so was this down to our quality or Cardiff's lack of, Martin?
I think it's a combination of both of those things. And also, I think the XG numbers are the high. But I think that's mainly because of a couple of really high XG chances, which kind of inflated it a fair bit. I mean, Dan James's chance alone was, I think, nearly 1 XG. It was very high.
According to FB Ref, it was 0.99, and then the post-shot XG was 0.97. So somehow Dan James made that worse, according to FB Ref. But just to say, StatsBomb have that at 0.94 and then 1 when he took the shot. So different models.
StatsBomb's probably the better model, isn't it, I think, generally considered. Yeah. So
I believe so. But yeah, so there's that chance, and I think also Bamford's chance was pretty high as well. So there's a couple of goals. I think Bamford's was 0.42, which he increased to. And
0.76, I think he increased it to.
Exactly. So that does inflate it a little bit. But we also did have a number of half chances built into there as well. We had Bamford, which I think is just shy of a big chance at 0.27, the one where the keeper saved it. So around 25 minutes in. So that was another
0.27.
Yeah, exactly. On that
one. Yeah,
and one later in the game, I'm guessing from a set piece from Joe Roden, again another 0.21, and then George's one was also a big chance at 0.36. So there's a number of half and big chances created. So it's a very pleasing performance, and I think we did do very well in this game to create, and especially from our counter pressing, that did help us to generate chances. But it wasn't just our only tool of making them. Our first goal came from concerted pressure. We had possession of the ball for a good amount of time before the first goal, which showed that we are able to create from both counter pressing and from in possession, which is always pleasing. So we're not a team who is one trick pony, and if we can't create through counter pressing, we can create via concerted possession. So yeah, it's good to see. But Cardiff's lack of quality definitely did play a part in this, because they were quite bad in comparison to how good we were. So it did help us out a wee bit.
Yeah, Dan, anything to add on our creativity within this game?
Yeah, I'm going to sort of step on the toes of some of the other stuff we're talking about later, but I just thought having a player like Bamford, who looks to go in behind and stretch the push the back line backwards, and having Thurpo and Dan James effectively offering a lot of width. So just the spacing horizontally and vertically was way better. So you stretch the pitch wide and you push the centre box back, you're going to give Somerville and Rutter and players like that a lot of space to operate, and that's only a good thing. So yeah, we just like around Christmas, you know, the Preston and West Brom game, we talked about that, didn't we, Martin, how we weren't happy, how the players were kind of clumping round the ball, and a bit like a Jesse Marsh game. I think we had less of that here. I think it was like lots of nice width, lots of depth. So it's just player profiles, but also disciplining the team as well, holding position and stretching the pitch way better. And, you know, we're quite direct at times, weren't we, in this game, which I think I like. I think, Martin, you've made that point in our group chat.
Yes,
you
know, I did, yeah.
We mixed it up well, so we build up, bring Cardiff on, and then hit them quick. Or you know, so just a lot of variety and a lot of ways to move them around. So just our general build-up was really nice. I just thought when we attacked, we moved them around really well, and then when we got to the final third, we got there in space often. It wasn't compact because of the way we moved it quicker or the way we stretched the pitch. So that was good.
Yeah, I agree with the, especially the stretching the pitch part. I noticed Archie was quite often wider in this game, and not inverting as much. He was sort of alternating between what he was doing, depending on where his teammates were, which was good to see. And you saw Dan James, who was coming in field a fair bit when Archie was going out. So both two are getting quite a nice understanding going on that right flank. Yeah. And it does help that we've got two flanks that we can effectively make chances from. And there was a little clip which I put on Twitter earlier from Archie with Dan James, where a nice play from Archie and that little chipped ball into the box, which I felt Dan James did a reasonable amount with. A lot of people were saying that it was another typical Dan James crap moment, but I thought he did as best he could there, to be honest.
He
tried to get it over the ball.
Is that the one where he hit the crossbar?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, apparently that was a 0.18 chance, which I thought was quite high for sort of a bouncing ball on the run in that sort of scenario. But
towards the edge of the penalty box on the right hand side, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Dan James did okay. His run was great, and Archie picked him out lovely, and Dan James made something of it. I mean, that was good football.
Yeah, exactly. He tried to get it over the goalkeeper to either score or to get Bamford onto it, and it nearly did one of those two things. It could have gone either way. If it had dropped a little bit sooner, it could have gone in, or Bamford could have tipped in. So yeah, I was happy with that.
Yeah,
so,
I think on that chance, just talking about, like, obviously Dan, you just said James made a really good run for that chance. I remember earlier on in the season, we were kind of talking about lack of cohesion, and it seemed to be that players weren't committing to movements. So, you know, you'd see Dan James kind of go one way and then be like, oh, well, they're not actually going to play that pass, and then the pass would get played, and he kind of just stood somewhere in no man's land and the ball's gone totally opposite direction. I feel like what Dan James has done is really kind of like started to commit to those movements beyond the defenders, and that's really helped us on that right-hand side over the past three games, which, you know, we've won 3-0 if we include the Peterborough game. So, again, impressive display for us, but admittedly poor opponents. Is there anything we can take from this, do we think?
I just think we can take, hopefully we can take lessons in approach rather than, I mean, we shouldn't get too carried away because Cardiff were like dog dirt, weren't they? They were like Wayne Rooney Birmingham levels of bad. I genuinely think Peterborough were better the week before. So Peterborough gave us more difficulty, you know, the week before. I get, admittedly, on their pitch, on a boggy, you know, boggy pitch, but still. So no, but I think it's just the kind of the approach to the game, the, you know, getting it forward quickly, playing direct when we need to, playing it short when we don't need to, you know, when we don't want to play it long, and having that kind of nice spacing, playing the ball in behind. It's just that kind of, I guess, the approach. The question is, can we apply that same approach to better teams that will get in our faces and will press us better than them and will defend better and will stop us from playing forward quickly so well? But yeah, I think that's kind of the blueprint. But it's like, can we apply it to better teams is the question.
Yeah, Martin, anything to add?
Yeah, I'd agree with what Dan said. Cardiff were bad. I've said it a few times now, and I don't think there will be any Cardiff fans listening. But if there are, sorry. They weren't able to do what Errol Bullock wanted them to do, I think, and just weren't able to play out. And we did make their life difficult, of course, because we were on form both in possession and out of possession. Yeah. So it's always going to be difficult when a team plays with the players we've got, as well as we did. So I think we can still take something from this. Not as much as if it was against, say, West Brom, we'd had this performance, who are a really hard to break down team. But we have had games against opponents where we maybe thought that we should have done better and we didn't. So in that sense, maybe you can take something from it, because we complained that we should be beating these teams, like ones who we've drawn to or lost to earlier in the season. And in this game, if we would have drawn or lost to this one, we should be beating these, the crap. So I think we can take a little bit from it, and it's hopefully something to say that we can do this to these sort of teams who don't have the same quality we do. On the right day, we can do it. So I think we can take a little bit from it, maybe not get too carried away.
Am I remembering correctly? Were these quite good first game of the season? Were they like half decent and probably, you know, some value for the point? I can't remember really. I just seem to remember thinking,
well, they did obviously go 2-0 up, but it was a makeshift starting lineup from us again. Obviously, first game of the season, we hadn't really made any signings.
Well, Nonto was up front, wasn't he?
I think Sinisterra actually started though as well. To be fair. So, yeah. But talking of forwards. And Somerville missed a penalty in this game, as mentioned in the summary. And we've missed quite a few recently. And Dan, lots of numbers you got for us, I hear.
Yeah. Well,
on our conversion rate.
Well, someone grumbled, I'm sure we've got a really bad conversion rate over the last few years. What's going on? And I was like, it does seem that way. Is it true? Do we have a bad conversion rate? And I'm afraid the answer is yes. So I just I went just to have a look at the numbers over the last 5 years. I've actually got 5.5 years, so 5 full seasons plus so far this season. So from Bielsa's first season, we've been awarded 28 penalties. That's in competitive games, League and Cup, and scored 20. So a 71% conversion rate. Which, you know, is a bit below what you'd expect. You expect 79%, I think, is the conversion rate.
Yeah, if we go by 77, 79, yeah.
Yeah. So this season so far, we've actually won 5 penalties, which is as many as we've won. I tell a lie. In the 1920 season, we got 6 penalties in that whole season. So we've actually won 5 penalties this season. So only just over half a season. So I wonder if that's something to look at. Are we good at winning pens this year? I don't know.
That's something to do with possibly Somerville and Rutter.
Yeah, perhaps. Dribbly boys. Yeah, so we've had 5 and we've scored 3, so 60% conversion rate. So Pascal, Strike and Joel Perreault have taken 1 each and put them away. Somerville's had 2 and put 1 away and missed 1, and Pat's taken 1 and missed 1. If we go back last season, we scored 2 out of 5, which is appalling 40% conversion rate. Click put his away, Rodrigo put 1 out of his 2 away, and Pat took 2 and missed them both. So there's a pattern building here, isn't there? The season before that, our second season in the Premier League, the year we just survived at Brentford, we got 5 penalties that season and we scored all 5, 100%. Which is surprising. Rafinha took 4, put them all away, and Rodrigo took 1, put his away. The season before that...
I'm still here.
Yeah, yeah. The season before that, our first season in the Premier League, we got 4 penalties and one put all 4 away. And that included Pat and Click with 2 each. So Pat... Something went wrong about 3 seasons ago with Pat. Our promotion season, we got 6 and put 4 away, so 66%. Click and Pat put 2 away each and missed 1 each. And then in Bielsa's first season, we only won 3 penalties that season, put 2 of them away. So yeah, so it's a bit up and down. So we've got 200% seasons and then some really, really bad seasons. I think the lesson is, sign players like Rafinha and let them take penalties. I think. But yeah, it's true, everybody. Leeds are bad at
pens. Pat's missed his last 3, then, according to those stats.
So when he signed for us, he had a 100% record in his first season. He had a 66% in his second season, then 100% in his third season. So, you know, if you average it up, he's probably all right. But then it's just gone off a cliff, hasn't it, since he started getting injuries. Probably lost his confidence. Who knows?
What percentage did you say it was for us the few seasons?
Overall, for the 5.5 seasons... I've counted 71%.
Yeah. I've just done a very quick calculation on the current season and championship, and it's standing around 76%, 76.3% is what the current conversion rate is. So we're not drastically lower than what the championship is. And if you consider that we're top end championship, we're really a low end Premier League with the squad that we've got, probably around about there. So we are lower than the average, but I wouldn't say massively. But yeah, we're definitely a few sinking seasons.
We're at 60% this season and 71% over the 5.5 that I counted. So, yeah. Mm. I mean, it's such a hard thing to draw lessons from, isn't it, really? Just other than find someone that's good at pens and hope they're on the pitch a lot.
Yeah, I guess the case is kind of like the volume of where those misses have come. They've obviously come, as you mentioned, we had like 2 full 100% seasons. We had one where we missed for 3 years, and then like it's dropped. That basically we've regressed and we've regressed sharp, and that's probably where, and as you mentioned, we've got 5 so far, and the most we've had over the past 5 years is 6 in a whole season, so that's highly concentrated to half a season as well. So I guess that's kind of like where that interpretation can come from regarding us being poor at penalties at the moment and stuff.
Just going on the eye test this season, I've seen like Pascal took his pen, didn't he, a few weeks back and took it really well. I'd like be more than happy for it to see him take another one. That was great pen, I thought. And Perreault took his and again took it very well. So you just give it to those two. You know, you're less...
if they're on the pitch.
Yeah. I mean, Pascal took the very much the centre-half approach, didn't he? And just like hit it firm to the side of the keeper. And, you know, and hope you've got enough on it. Yeah.
We know you're injured, Pasc, but get on the pitch and take the penalty.
Yeah, please. Yeah. Anyway, well, there we are. That's it.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Dan. No, it was a nice chat about penalties. But before we continue with the interrogation, it's time for an ad break. And before that, I have to plug the Patreon. because Tom Alderson would be very annoyed, but I really don't care because he puts mushrooms in his spag bol, so he deserves nothing in his life. But don't worry, patrons, you don't have to listen to this next part. Our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts, and if you want to pay a little bit more, you get other benefits included with early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, and bonus podcasts. And if you want to find out more about our Patreon, please visit patreon.com/ASAW.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dan, you've kind of touched on him bringing something different. We saw Patrick Bamford leading the line for us again in this game. What differences do you really think he makes with the way we attack and in particular and how we look to create chances?
Well, it's space and variety, isn't it? So what he offers is he offers the ball over the top. He holds the ball up in ways that we haven't seen from Perreault or Rutter yet. Although Rutter was getting better at that. And Rutter does occasionally run in behind, but I think Patrick Bamford's natural instinct is to engage centre-backs and drag them away. So just all the time, he's taking the defence away from our creative players who like to operate between the lines. Now, if the game is condensed because everybody's running towards the ball in the Leeds team, it's harder for the likes of Rutter and Somerville who like to operate between the lines to find space. But if Bamford's dragging them that way and Dan James is dragging them that way also, and there's an outlet ball with Firpo on the far side, it means that the opposition have got a space out. So it's not just width, it's depth as well, which Bamford gives. So yeah, I just think it just makes space largely for our better creative players. And like I say, hold up play is really good. His link up play is solidly really good. It's always been good, hasn't it? And you know, so that's kind of what he's offering. It'd be interesting. I mean, he looks fit at the moment, so it'd be interesting to see how he goes against really good centre backs. You know, when we play a strong team, but so far so good. He's looking stronger. He's looking quick. He's moving pretty well, I think. He doesn't look like early in the season. He looked like he wasn't moving particularly well, and now he is. So yeah, let's hope it continues.
And Martin, apart from obviously himself for being able to play and score 3-3, who do you feel in the squad benefits most from Patrick Bamford being in the squad?
So it's a hard one. There's a couple of players who I think will benefit from him the most. I'd say it's between Somerville and Rutter, basically the ones who are doing most of our dribbling. Because if you've got someone who is occupying centre backs, it's going to make things easier for them when they're trying to move into the box. Because they're moving forward the box, they're bringing one of the midfielders with them. Then you've got the centre backs who are thinking, do I step out to slip this guy? Or do I continue dealing with Bamford, who's just at the side of me? So it poses problems for centre-backs and other players in the pitch when you've got a striker who can always make good movement around centre-backs, because it just creates so much space for them to move into that. And also other players who are making underlapping or overlapping runs, it just helps so much with the way we look to create chances. And I think it's probably between our two dribblers who will benefit the most from it, and probably the two who are creating the most chances for us as well. And they'll be hoping that they can get a lot more assists via Bamford, I'm sure, because Bamford also helps bring others into the game to score as well. So it's not just him scoring the goals, it's him creating space so others can penetrate that space. So yeah, how I'm not sure if Dan has anything different to add on that.
Okay, the other thing is, he's just an outball, isn't he? So for under pressure, we've got a better quality outball there as well. So it's just, again, it's variety, isn't it? You know, the ability to hit it long, which we didn't necessarily always have with Rutter and Perreault, who naturally wanted to come towards the ball as a rule. So Bamford will often move away from the ball, won't he, to receive it on the run. Just so it's just variety, isn't it, and an out ball and just different angles. So yeah,
I think potentially it's going to also help players like Dan James. So we already saw in the Birmingham game that, you know, he put one of those kind of half hopeful, half good balls that he puts in, and Bamford was able to head that in. And I think that that's not something we've seen from Rotero or Peru when they've been playing in those roles. So it gives us that different, like you said, that difference with crossing and an actual player who can meet those crosses, I guess.
I'd like to see Bamford and Peru have a bit of a run. I mean, they did against Peterborough. I can see it kind of working like an old-fashioned strike partnership. You know, they're kind of 9 and 10 together. Bamford stretching and Peru arriving late, if we played that kind of system where, you know, like we're creating lots of cutbacks, it might work having those two arriving at different points. But, you know, no one's dropping Rutter at the moment.
Yes. I guess maybe you'd move Rutter somewhere else.
Yeah, true.
Which we have discussed previously
on
this podcast of where you could do that. And Martin, I know that you're a big fan of this next player that we're going to discuss, and we've seen a bit more of him over the past couple of games in Ilya Gruev. So how do you think he's done? Talk to us about what you've liked about him.
There's a lot of things I've liked about the way he interprets midfield role. He plays it a little bit differently to the way that Ampadu does, I felt. Not massive differences, but it's just little things like he's more prone to dropping in between these as the centre-backs, I've noticed. That's something which Ampadu does, but I think you quite often see Ampadu just like sort of waving his hand from side to side saying, like, no, don't play to me at the moment. But he's more likely to drop deeper. And then when he does that, our centre-backs have been marauding forward with the ball, I've noticed. Especially in this, I noticed a few times either Ampadu or Roden were both getting forward when he was dropping deeper. I think it's these little rotations which help, and the competition guessing, and really helps us to play our way out of pressure when teams are pressing. So obviously Cardiff didn't really do a whole lot of it, but one thing they were doing was blocking passing lanes, and doing those sort of movements helps with that. So that's one thing that I like from him. And I would probably say he's probably our best long range passer in the main first team options that we've got in midfield of Camara, of Andrew, and Roof. I think he's probably the one with a better pass range, and they're able to make, especially the central passes that he'd been making. But also, he did a really lovely crossfield ball towards the start of the second half. I'm not sure if you both saw that one.
Is that the one for Firpo, who headed it down and Bamford then put wide, but he was offside?
No,
I mean, that was also a lovely ball.
It went through to Dan James. It was about maybe 5-10 minutes into the second half. So it was just sort of from the left over to the right, and it was just really, really lovely ball. So yeah, I like a lot of what he does, and it's good to see that we see more of him now, so we know that if Ampadu ever was to get injured, that we have a capable player there who can do the things that he does. And it's not just his in-possession game, which is good. Out of possession as well, he's very good, especially in the counter-press. He's very quick to snap into that. As soon as we lose the ball, he's there to get an interception. He had 4 interceptions in this game against Cardiff, which is really good. And it helps us to keep the pressure on and to not give up any transitional attacks. That's a big thing, which I think they worked on in the past few months, is giving up transitional attacks. Because earlier in the season, we figured that it could have been a bit of a problem for us. The defense wasn't great, but I think it's improved a lot. And Groove, since even though he's not played that many games, he's clearly got a very good understanding of what Farker wants him to do in those counter-pressing moments, and how quickly he snaps into it is really promising. So yeah, I'm more than happy for Groove to play when Ampadu isn't there, or when Camara isn't there. All three of them are equally good, in my opinion.
Yeah, Dan, anything to add on Groove's performances?
No, echo everything Martin said. Yeah, just he probably does have the best passing range. To be fair to Ampadu, he's putting some nice long balls recently. The Borough game for that super goal Georgie scored, that was a good Ampadu long ball. But yeah, you're right. I think Gruev. Is it Gruev or Gruev? Do we agree?
Gruev,
I think we're going with. Yeah, I think he naturally has that kind of that different passing range, and he naturally looks to play it long and more incisive, I think, than Ampadu. Ampadu's probably naturally more of a ball recycler, isn't he, than Grove, who's probably more incisive, I would say. One thing I noticed about it, I thought Groyf and Camara combined nicely at the weekend as well. So when we're building up, like, one of them would kind of draw the pressing players away, and the other one would rotate into the space, and vice versa. I just seem to be a lot of kind of nicely rehearsed kind of rotations from the pair of them, and it seemed to just work quite smoothly and got us out of deeper areas and into the midfield quite easily. So yeah, it's just a really good all-round performance. And one thing I worried about him when I first saw him was like the physicality of the English game, you know, because he's not a big guy, he's a slight guy, and he's got kind of like a little tippy-tappy kind of running style. He doesn't look like a power athlete, does he? But and it's taken him a while to kind of, I guess, adapt to English, the pace of English football, maybe. That's been a factor in his...
Yeah, I think that's been one of the key factors, personally.
Yeah, he looked less than convincing early on, and he just looked a little bit more comfortable each time he's come on, hasn't he? A little bit better. And then, you know, at Peterborough second half in particular in this game, he really like, oh yeah, we've got a player here. That's good. Yeah.
I just want to say that I can't believe that when you're talking about Ampadu's long passes assisting, you picked out the Rutter one, as good as that was, but you didn't pick out Bamford's versus Peterborough. You know, and you were there. Like, you saw that live.
I saw it live, yeah. Yeah, so that's about Bamford, isn't it? Like, the Rutter one was a good ball and a good takedown of Rutter, wasn't it? Whereas the Bamford one was, it was a more of a, I won't say a hopeful, but it was a kind of a bit of a ping, wasn't it? You know, it wasn't a...
Yeah.
So
I mean, there's a reason that Bamford had to jump a foot in the air to control it on his chest.
Yeah, whereas the ball for Rutter against Middlesbrough was like tip-top, wasn't it? I mean, Rutter had to make it, you know, had to take it down, but it was a lovely ball, weighted ball as well.
Yeah, and so, as we've just mentioned, we've been talking about really happy with all the central midfielders, but Will Clare's spoken about him already today. So he had a question on Gruff's inclusion. So to sum it up, he said, when a centre-back is injured, do you think that Farker is now likely to continue to bring Cooper in and keep Ampadu at central midfield? Or do you think he's more likely to shift Ampadu to centre-back like we've just seen and then play Cruyff in the central midfield in there? Martin, what's your thoughts on that?
I'm not 100% certain on this one because I know Farker does respect the senior players in the squad quite a lot, and he has been fine with using Cooper at every opportunity to bring him in, and he hasn't had any problem with it, and Cooper has largely looked good playing at centre-back. However, the combination of Gruz and Kamara and with Ampadu behind has been really good, and it's worked very well. So I would probably lean more towards him doing this and having Gruz in midfield and having Ampadu back into defence, just because it does keep most senior. I think you have to say, obviously, Cooper hasn't got long in his contract left, so he's probably not going to play in too many more games, and he probably accepts that too. He's his current position in the squad. But who knows? It could be a horses for courses approach, and you'll see one game where Cooper does come in, and then the next game it'll be different, and Ampadu will drop back to centre back to have, as Fag puts it, a bit of a break from doing as much running. So, yeah, it could be a mixture of both. I'm not sure if Dan thinks I'm different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't expect him to change it. The only thing I can think is if we're playing a team that are really dangerous from set pieces or I've got like a big centre forward, that maybe he'll bring Cooper in. I mean, Ampadu's no slouch in the air, but I think Cooper's probably a stronger player in the air, isn't he? So that's the only... But, you know, on current form, I wouldn't change it. But I don't think, what are Preston like? I mean, this is preview, so... who's their centre forward? It was a... I think it was quite a big guy, wasn't he? So maybe it is a game for Cooper, I don't know. But let's see.
I think my approach would be, again, opposition depending. If we think that we can stretch and move their front line around to create kind of what we did against Cardiff this weekend, where we had Rodon carry, we had Ampadu carry into that space that we created. Whereas I think if we have Cooper, he's probably not going to want to carry as much, and he'll look for a pass through that space. But I think the carries were what kind of really helped us in this game with that deep build-up. And I think that's kind of what you were saying regarding the difference of Cruyff's... we've said his name so many different ways in this podcast.
It's like Johan Cruyff, but Cruyff, isn't it?
Yeah, but with a G, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, with him dropping a bit further back in the build-up, in between the centre-backs, that creates that space, obviously, for Ampadu to run into. Whereas I think the reason why Ampadu maybe doesn't do it is because if he gets the ball, he's happy to turn and carry from the middle as the midfielder, which is not what Cruyff seems to want to do, maybe. But yeah, I think it's going to be one of those horses for courses, depending on how we think we can pull a front team apart. Like, if they're pressing, if they're a really pressy team, so like maybe Norwich, because they're quite intense, you'd maybe go Cooper. Whereas someone else, Preston, maybe because they're a bit more of a mid-block, we'll maybe try pull them out and then, you know, carry with Rodon and Ampadu. Is there anyone else in this game, Dan, that you felt did well that we've not discussed yet?
Yeah, both fullbacks. Archie Gray had a great game, combining lovely with Dan James. Coming infield, going outfield, that combination seems to be developing really well. It was dead secure. I thought he handled his opposite number like with ease. I mean, what opposite number? Who was it? Can't remember. You know, give Archie credit for that.
Josh Bowler played on the right, which we didn't expect. I remember that. So he was Firpo's man. And as you said, Firpo.
It was Grant. It was Grant who we weren't expecting to play.
Callaghan Grant. Yeah, exactly. Quiet. So just a really good game. But I think more importantly, like the combination with some of, you know, that kind of sequence we discussed earlier where Dan James tried to lob the keeper. That was really, really clever play from Archie, the way he kind of ran up the field, turned back, built again, and then lobbed a lovely little chip over for Dan James. So I just thought he had a real good game. And I thought Firpo, in an attacking sense, less in a defensive sense, but it didn't really matter. But in an attacking sense, Firpo was involved in a couple of the goals, wasn't he? And just generally like an absolute nuisance down the left-hand side, really nice outlet, some good quality moments. So yeah, those two, absolutely worth a shout.
Yeah, Martin, anyone else?
I probably couldn't say anything bad about anyone on the pitch, to be honest. I could probably say something good about every player. I think everyone had their moments where they did something where I thought, oh, that's there's little things here and there. There's a lot who were saying that Somerville had a bad game and that his touches were off. But when I was watching back, I noticed the touches that people were talking about were overhit passes. And there was especially one from someone who doesn't normally overhit passes, one from Georgie. It was in the first half. I think it was not long before the second goal where he did that lovely mazy run and then passed it to Somerville, who was inside the box. But he overhit it a little bit. He put a little bit too much power on it, so it was hard to control. That's why that was bad. And also another one, I think Firpo was another one where he miscontrolled it in the middle of the park. But his play for the opening goal was fantastic. That carry into the box was great. There's not many players in the Championship who can make those sort of carries. You've got probably Routier, Somerville. You've got Jack Clark. I can't not mention Jack Clark for when it comes to ball carrying. Otherwise, Adam would probably be lurking in the bushes and ambush me. But yeah, there's not many players who would be able to make that dribble. And he did a few of those things like that. And people are judging it a lot on the fact that he missed the penalty, I feel. Which, yeah, he missed a penalty. It happens.
I'm glad you raised it. I was going to make it pretty much the same point that, like, yeah, Somerville miscontrols some passes, perhaps, whether they're his fault or not. Obviously, you think not, that's fine. But he was involved in two of our goals. He was a key part in two of our goals. So, like, yeah, okay, perhaps it was an 8, you know, perhaps it was a 7 out of 10 rather than his usual 8 or 9 out of 10. But still, like,
I think that's what it is.
Still
like,
key.
He's been a master of his own downfall in that sense, in a way. Even though he wanted a downfall, he's just set his bar so high this season that because everything didn't come off like it seems to have come off for him in this game, it just appeared that he had a poor game. But yeah, I think just one thing regarding it's a nothing, but Cardiff probably thought they could put crosses in from the right, and using Callum Grant, who's a much more physical player, against someone like Archie Gray as well at the back post, probably was part of their game plan. Harking back to that now that you've reminded me that it was Callum Grant who played on the left, but he did nothing. So, but yeah, one final question from Joe on Twitter. They're asking, if we could sign one player this January, what position would it be in? Now, we've obviously done a podcast where we talk about those possible players and the possible profile, but if we're just going position, we'll just do quick fire. Dan, what position would you sign?
Left back.
Left back for Dan. Martin?
Left back.
And for me, it would be a left back. Yeah, we're all in agreement. So yeah, if you want to listen to me and Martin discuss that transfer window and where we think we could improve and what sort of profile we'd look for at left back, Martin, where can they go find that?
They can find that at patreon.com/ASAW Patreon. And just to mention, that pod is part of the Pablo tier, which is the tier that everyone should be on, really, because you get the most out of it. You get everything that we do on that, and it's not really that much more than middle tier, really. It's got about two people who are on the click tier, and it's like a pound less. Why? But yeah, I digress. It's a really good pod that me and Tom did, and we were just both really happy with it afterwards. We just both said straight away, that was really good.
I can echo that. I wasn't involved. I just listened to that one. It was a good pod. Well done, fellas.
Ah, thank you. And coming up, I believe that you two have a under-21s podcast coming up soon.
We've not organised it yet, but yeah, I think we're overdue one. But they've had a few cancellations, haven't they? So we're probably going to have to wait till they have some games so we've got something to talk about. Because the game tonight was cancelled, wasn't it? And the last game was cancelled. It was up at Newcastle. Was it Wind? I forget now. So yeah, once we've had a couple of games, we'll get together and chat 21s. I think we'd like to have a look at Montero. Is it Montero?
Yeah, I think that's what we said, yeah. Montero, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's to come forward, and so they're not going to record that for a few weeks. So you've got time to sign up, and then you know you can get your January pay in and then sign up and listen to it all, because we know that it's a long 6 weeks over the next from Christmas and New Year. But that's everything for this review. We'll be back with a Preston preview some point later on this week. That game is on Sunday, I believe. So all that's left for me to say is thank you, Dan. It's been a while since we've had a pod together.
It is.
So it's been good to chat and catch up. So yeah.
It has. I've enjoyed it. Cheers, mate.
And thank you, Martin. You're on every week, so like, you know, it's just a norm. But thank you again for giving your time.
Thank you as well for doing a lovely job at hosting, as always.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you, listeners, for listening. And we hope you have a good week. Ciao.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.